Radio City Talks Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Okay, so it's Radio City Talk. It's Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. I do hope you're well. Today on the show, we've got, another really busy show. Lots to talk about from the field of mental health. We do it every weekday here on Radio City Talk. And Mental Health Monday, of course, is also available as a podcast. Thank you to many people who've downloaded this episode, previous episodes as well, and checking out some of the stories that we're covering here on Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. If you're ever listening to the programme and you want to share your own story, you can get involved in the programme by simply emailing me, mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. If you want to share your mental health journey with us, absolutely brilliant stuff. Drop us an email. Tell us about it. mick@radiocity.co.uk. Maybe you're involved in an organisation doing fantastic work in the field of mental health. Get involved in the programme too. You can also drop us an email about that. My guest in the studio for today's show is a guy who's been going through issues for many different years, now trying to get a handle on them. I'm very pleased to say we've got Peter with us in the studio. Peter, thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us on Mental Health Monday. Really appreciate you coming in to share your story. It's fair to say that you're very much in the middle of your journey from a mental health point of view. Just tell us how old you are now, Peter.
I'm 36.
And at what point did you, in your life, start to believe that you might have potential issues that might be related to your mental health?
It was when I was about 10, I thought, because the way I was mixing with people, it wasn't like normal. I'd either go away in a corner or do my own thing, and if someone wanted to come near me or try and talk to me, I'd hit them. So I didn't know what it was, and neither did me family know what it was. So it was quite hard to grasp, and I never really fitted in sociably in any groups. And when I was a kid, it just was very hard to mix, and I started noticing changes as well. Round about that age, I had epilepsy, so I used to suffer a lot with fits, and my family kept moving around, so I didn't know how to mix with people very well. My family thought I was just a bad behaved boy, really. So the way I was, they thought I was having another tantrum and that, but they didn't really know it was like mental health.
And as that sort of eked into your teenage years, 15, 16, 17 years of age, they can be difficult times for any young man or woman growing up in that sort of a time. What was your experience of it when you were 15, 16, 17?
Well, from the age, around about that age, and like I could say 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, I was bullied a lot at school because I was different, and I just got battered all the time. But I didn't think, well, it must be just because they don't like me. But I found it really, I started noticing then that I was having these really unusual feelings that I couldn't get a handle on it. So it was like I was trying to get a handle on something that was pretty big. I didn't know what it was that was making me upset. I'd go home, I'd hit out at my family. And then around about 17, it started getting worse because at the time, in the 90s, you never really talked about mental health the way you talk about mental health. People just thought, oh, you're a badly behaved kid. So you were like, oh, well, hang on. What's going on?
That's just the way I am. But it's funny, actually, yeah. But you got a sense there was something. There was something that was going on that was holding you back or that was creating this tension in your life.
Well, my mum had the same feeling. When I had an early age, they tried getting me diagnosis, but the doctors turned around to me, mum, I only found this out last year, actually. They said to me, mum, oh, he's just a highly intelligent young kid. So my mum didn't think nothing of it.
She was probably quite impressed.
Yeah.
Highly intelligent, that's a good diagnosis to get, isn't it?
But it wasn't that. My mum knew, but she was getting fobbed off that my schooling was really bad because with the bullying, So I think the way it was then is completely different to now, where we're getting diagnosis at an early age, but with the people that haven't got the diagnosis, it's missing them. So now you've got like the likes of me, who's waiting for an assessment at the age of 36, when really it should have been done at the age of 10.
Just tell us what life was like in your 20s then. So you're looking now, and I say you're still on this journey now, Peter. So, yeah. You know, this is not a finished story or completed story by any stretch, yeah. But you're on the journey now through your mid-30s. What were you doing through your 20s? What sort of things were happening in your lives as you were battling these issues?
Well, I didn't want to confront it. I was scared of confronting the mental health, because I thought, oh, it's just usual to feel really upset or really angry. So I didn't question it. So I was doing what every 20-year-old did, going up the pub. But as well, I was, because of like my family issues, because of my temper would get really, really violent. My mum and dad couldn't handle it, so I was homeless. So I was always like about tossing around people's couches and that. And it wasn't my mum and dad's fault. It was just that at the time, we didn't know about me. They didn't know about the mental health, and neither did I. So, but within that, I always said to myself, when I left school, I wanted to make friends. So I was always going out, meeting people, and just having a sociable life. But I always had at the back of my mind that I've got these issues, so I need to address them at some point.
How would you describe those issues? Had you put them, turned them into a phrase? You know, people talk about the black dog, or, you know, if people feel like they've got a black cloud hanging over them. Had you come to terms with those feelings and sort of categorised them at all?
Because I'd found, like, when I was bullied, I found, like, ways of, like, so I'd get very creative. So I'd sit down and I'd visualise something bad and I'd draw it. Or I'd say, well, your life's going to only get better. I'd say, like, my life's only going to get better at this point. So I had, like, a positive, like, thing, like, sort of thing I'd done, like it was art. And then I've got into poetry. But at the age of 15, that's when I met George. And when you meet someone, you think, hang on a minute, like, I met George when I was in school. I was going through a tough time with bullying, and I said to my PSE teacher, she went, what do you want to do for work experience? So I went, I wouldn't mind doing drama or theatre. So I met George. And you know, when you think of a drama tutor, you think, oh, he's about 18, he'll be around my age. And then the first time I saw George, I looked and I was in shock. I was going, how can this 40-year-old tell me what drama is? And that. But with that, I felt more comfortable around him than I did my own teachers, even when we first met. And it was like, I don't know, it just really, he pushed me to find out about art and things where I go, art, what's art? He was like Picasso, and all that. So that gave me a different outlay, where I could have went down drugs, I could have went down, probably with my temper, I would probably be in prison. But because of I met George at that particular time in my life, it gave me a different direction.
For people who don't know, so George McCain, very familiar figure here on Radio City Talk. We speak to him very regularly. Runs Yellow House, which is a centre which works with young people and older people, and has done for many, many years through Liverpool City Centre. Now, you just said the most incredible thing. You said George McCain stopped you from killing somebody. Is that, so you had anger issues, and do you think your anger issues, if you hadn't have been introduced to a new way of thinking about things from an arts point of view, a drama, creative point of view, that your life would have gone in a direction which would have led you down some very, very dark and violent pathways?
Yeah, because I didn't know about my mental health at the time. I always felt everyone was against me, and plus as well with the bullying, it was like a barrier I put up. So anyone would challenge me, and I would go at either, but I would be very physical and violent. But then when I met George and we saw that, when I saw I could do different things, I could be like creative, that was when I went, yeah, this is a new route. So I carried on, but I still didn't address the issues that were in my head. So I was in Yellow House, and it just looked like this place where you go, wow, there was pictures everywhere. And I remember the first time we were in a place in Bootle called Goddard Hall, and they were doing a performance, and I was the new kid, and you're in a group of 40 to 50 people, and you're like, oh my god, it's very nerve-wracking. But everyone made me feel welcome. And then I developed when my mates had knocked, what are you doing? So on Tuesday, Monday, I go, oh, I'm going here. And they go, oh, all right. But I felt comfortable, and I felt it was a place where I could develop.
We've got Peter with us on Mental Health Monday, sharing his story through the work that he's done as an individual, but also through Yellow House, which is a fantastic organisation based in Liverpool City Centre that does things through drama, the arts, workshops and everything in between. They've got a really good Facebook page, by the way. You can find out some more about the work that they're doing. They've also got a contentment project that they've featured on Mental Health Monday before as well, where they talk about mental health as a matter of course. So it almost seems, Peter, from what you're saying there, in having this introduction into your life as a young man, it's in your life in a slightly different journey, you know, kept you out of prison. But obviously those issues, as you say, were still ongoing as well, because you were looking for some kind of maybe medical intervention on that one. From that point of view, you've had various interactions, haven't you, with medics and GPs. It's not always gone exactly according to plan, though.
Yeah, well, when I was young, well, I'd say about 10, I had a kidney operation, then I had the epilepsy, and then now the mental health. But they never, I think what it is with doctors in general, like like last year when I was asking for help, they also think mental health, when you go to them and say you're feeling suicidal, which I have been, I do feel suicidal. And because I haven't had the assessments, I've had two assessments, sorry. One's from, they lead you up into getting the proper full diagnosis. But I was scared. It's scaring when you're actually going to the doctors and you're saying, I need help, I want help. Because you think, oh, they're going to fob me off, they're going to do this. And it's not that they're not going to fob you off. It's what when you go in, you say, I'm feeling suicidal. The first thing they say is, are you depressed? And they go, oh, you're depressed? So I go, because it's a doctor, you don't challenge there. So I went away. But something in my head was saying, it's not depression. Because depression, sometimes you can sit there, you don't feel like you want to do anything. So I was like that. I was quite, so I'd done the, as people say, the Google doctor. So I went on Google and I looked at bipolar. And then I was thinking, well, I'm getting symptoms of bipolar where my moods could go up and my moods could go down. So then I went back to the doctors. And I said to them, listen, this is not depression. And she's like, what do you mean? I think it is. And I went, no, I don't think it's depression. She goes, why? What do you think it is? And I went, oh, it's bipolar. But when people who know me, I'm a very stubborn person. So when I get something in my head, I've got to go, right, I've got to see this through. Because I was getting very high points. I was getting very low points as well. So I was like, no, this can't be right. So when I said that, about 5 minutes after, she just said to me, do you want to get assessed? And I went, yeah. So I remember the first assessment, they were asking me questions and they were saying, well, I always remember this one question. She goes, what would you do if there's two parents outside the car talking and they left the baby out of the baby seat? And I just came out, I go and punch the parents. And then realised what I said, and I went, oh, hang on. She went,
can I change my answer?
Yeah. So, but as well, when we went for my dad come with me, and I was a bit hesitant with my dad coming with me. So, but I made up his day because he could tell them things which I didn't even know about my birth, about how I was in the family, because I was very violent towards me father and my mother. I'd hit them. And it wasn't me. I know now, I call it like I was a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde sort of person. One nice, one good. And so then they said, oh, we could have autism. So I was looking and I was thinking in my head, I was going, no. This can't be right. I can't. But then certain things made sense. And I was like, hang on. So they put me in for another assessment with the mental health team. So they said, right, we're going to give them a diagnostic assessment. So it make you more aware of what it is. So then I go home, me and my dad were talking, and then a couple of days later, the doctor phoned me and she went, thank you. And I went, what for? She went, making me realise that it's not all about depression. You made me realise that it could be a bit more.
See, it's so interesting this, and we often talk on this programme, Peter, about, you know, making sure or focusing on young people, because if you focus on young people, solve their problems or get to the root of their problems when they're 12, 13, 14... it prevents the situation that you find yourself in there, where there's almost like a scattergun approach to, well, it must be depression, but actually, could it be bipolar? Could it be something else? Could there be undiagnosed Asperger's or undiagnosed autism, which may have caused you some problems, which may have had a negative impact on your mental health in a different way? I wonder if actually you're a great example of somebody who, in looking for help or failing to get help at a sign of help when you were very, very young, that you find yourself now as a guy in his mid-30s still looking for the answers.
Yeah, I think when we're looking at it now, there's people who were looking at diagnosis, and I was looking at a document by the National Autistic Society. And what they say is the NICE guidelines for waiting time should be 3 months. But I think it was yesterday in Parliament, they had a debate on waiting autistic diagnostic waiting times. And that come up. But I've been waiting over a year for mine. And there's been people who were waiting over three, like children, the estimated time is 3 years. And adults, it's 5 years. So what do we do in between them? Is it, do we leave them on the scrap pile or do we try and help them in a different way? So I think personally, we should try and help them while they're waiting. Because if you can say to someone, well, you're not on your own, it happened to me, then... And if you can give some people positive, like, outcomes of how you've dealt with it, because I've dealt with it through art, poetry, even going into schools with George and the Yellow House, saying, well, this is my story, this is how you don't have to be on your own, you can deal with your situation. But it's... some people don't want to talk. I've got friends who have got schizophrenia who are actually quite scared of how they're getting treated as well. So, but they're coming to me and saying, I don't like the way this person's treating me. And I'm going, well, you could do this. And then I'm realising, and we sometimes laugh, I go, well, I've got a mental health problem, and I'm going. So sometimes I'll take it in my head, well, hang on a minute. But, and then I'm realising they're coming to me because I'm willing to talk openly about it. And then what we've got now is, I'm working with George on the Contentment Project. And what I've said to George is, with politicians, people who are saying they're working in mental health, then we want to, well, me and George have said, we want to help hold them accountable for saying that they're working with people in mental health. Because it ends up with cases like myself where, like last year, I was feeling suicidal and I did want to kill myself. But then you've got like the likes of MPs who are saying, well, we're working with people with mental health. We're doing this, this and this. And they're getting away with it because they're not doing what they're saying to that they're working with. And if someone can hold them accountable and say, well, we need people with mental health need help to and support to talk about their issues, because I'm lucky in the respect that I've got good friends around me who know, because I have been open about my experiences and my mental health. Some of them have known me for a long time and I've known, but when I've spoken about it, they've been very supportive. And like George and the Yellow House, where now I'm working on the Contentment Project, it's going to like be a big wide thing what we do.
Peter, you touched on the idea that, you know, feeling suicidal was still an issue that you were dealing with. Those lows, is there anything that triggers those moments?
If like I've been in relationships, it's a bit of a cliche, like relationships. Also, if I argue with someone, and it can be a brief little arguments where some people would just go, oh, it's all right. I go, well, why did I argue with it? Why did I do this? And I overthink. So then sometimes it can be like I overthink things. Also, my past, I find like the bullying has made me think that I'm worthless. I don't sort of belong in, and then it gets that much, I'm overthinking, overplaying it in my head, that I do have suicidal thoughts. But then what I think of something positive very quickly to like sort of combat the negative thoughts I'm having. So, and I think about my family, my friends, and then so I just snap out of it. But like last year, I did literally go down by the River Mersey because I wanted to throw myself in. And that's when I asked for help and went to the doctors. But it was, I think what it is, because I haven't had a diagnosis, I think, well, I don't know what's wrong with me. So I'm like, well, is it me or is it, what have I done wrong? And I can't really. But since I've started putting in the steps of like getting the diagnosis, I've started like talking when I'm feeling like that and just saying, listen, I'm not feeling in a good mood. I'm not feeling in a good place today. And then like if I'm with George, I go, I've had this happened. And then as soon as I talk about it, I'm okay then. And I'm like back to my normal self.
The sort of, when you went to the doctor and you were saying, look, I don't think it's what you're saying. I feel like I need to have further assessment. Do you feel like if you'd have been able to say those things when you were 20 years of age, that you'd have been in a different place now? I'm often aware on this programme that sometimes people, if they've had a negative experience within the medical profession, we don't want to on this programme put people off going to see their GP and going out speaking about their problems. But do you get a sense that if you were able to to speak to somebody sooner, that you're able to have those ideas. Maybe if you had, you know, a better idea in your own mind about what things were sooner, you'd have been in a better place now.
I think younger, if I was able to say something when I was 10 years of age, then I think, yeah. I think also people have not got to be scared of going to the doctors because the doctors are there to help. But if you think, but also as well, I was talking to a friend about this. Don't be scared of challenging them if you think it's not what they're saying. Because at the end of the day, you're the person who knows your body, your mental well-being. You know how you feel at every time of the day, you know. So if you think it's something else, also challenge them, because then you either feel, I felt a lot better when I done it, because I know now, even though I'm waiting a long time for the last assessment, I'm getting answers. But if I wouldn't have said nothing, I would have been on antidepressants. So it's also good to challenge and say, it's not this. I don't think it's this. Don't be put off by going to your doctor. I don't class it as a negative experience. I class it as a learning curve, because I learned. As I said, when people, George has known me since I was 15, and when I get something in my head, I'm very stubborn and I'll go, listen, I don't think it's this. And they go, it can be scary because you're challenging someone who's been through the training, who's been through years and years of training. But as well, don't look at, I'd advise people not to do what I done and look on the internet as well. But if you feel if you feel within your own body that it's different, then you go and you keep pestering the doctor. Don't be, and I think the way I am, I'm like that. If I'm thinking, well, hang on a minute. And then if I'm wrong, I'll go, sorry about that.
Well, in terms of the diagnosis path that you're on at the moment, where do you feel, or where do you hope to be? Let's jump forward, say, 3 or 4 years into it. Let's look ahead to the year 2020, maybe. Where do you want to be in 2020? How do you want to sort of be seeing the world at that point, do you think?
Do you know what? That's a hard one. But I think I want to be seeing myself as a person who talks on behalf of people with mental health problems who don't feel that they can talk to anyone about it. I feel to be a spokesperson for people who can't speak or don't feel that they have a voice. That's where I see myself going. And also, not to be scared to say you have a mental health problem. Because you know what men are like? Men are the worst for it. Because I think the very stiff, stereotypical, the lady stays at home, does all the man goes and works. So if the man comes home, he's like, well, I'm not going to say how I'm feeling. I'll just say I'm all right. And then the woman goes, how are you, love? He goes, oh, I'm okay. And then goes into a room on his own and starts crying. And I think I want more men to open up about the feelings and about the mental health. I was in a pub and a lad I know, he had all he self-harmed, and he was telling me his story. Then someone I know who was in the army, he was saying he suffered with mental health problems. So a lot of people come up to me and talk to me, and I'm going, I'm only having a pint, or I'm only having a drink. But I feel honoured that they are coming up to me, and it's all lads. And it's all lads I used to think, wow, you're a little tough guy. And then when I asked, because I saw it, and I'm not the very discreetest, but I go, what's that on your arm? And then when I saw it, he told me. But I think that's what I want to do. I want to make sure that people are not scared to talk about it. Plus, I left school with no GCSEs as well. And the best thing I'd done was for a distraction for myself, I went back to college to get qualifications. Like this year, I've just finished, well, I passed the mentoring course. So what I'm going to do with that, I'm going to mentor people with mental health problems because I think it's needed. Even if like they're going through the diagnosis and they've got to wait, then I want to be able to go, well, I can help you. I've been there and I've done that.
Peter, I think that's a fantastic plan. We'll see you again in 2020. We'll have a catch up as well. Thank you for sharing your story today on the program. Really appreciate it, and thank you for sharing your story in terms of where you're up to at the moment. It's fantastic to hear that, you know, once you go through, once you continue along your own journey, you want to sort of turn it back in on itself and help other people and talk about it in the way that you have talked about it. Hopefully, maybe by talking about it today on the program, that'll give people an insight into their own experiences, maybe some of the things that they're experiencing as well. Echo with some of the thing and chimes with some of the things that you've been saying, but we wish you all the best. What we'll do is we'll point people in the direction of the Yellow House. If you type in Yellow House Liverpool into any search engine, the organization comes up. George McCain has been mentioned many times on this particular program. He does some fantastic work with people in Liverpool, but the various different organisations right around the country. In Yellow House at the moment, they have the Contentment Project as well, which is a mental health project where they get together and they discuss mental health and talk about it in many different ways. Peter, thanks for your time. Thanks for joining us on Mental Health Monday.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.